to the last case of the day, which is 091135, Patrick Mulligan versus Michael Astru.
May it please the court, my name is Jason Whitley. I represent the claimant appellant, Patrick Mulligan, counsel. I think that the discussion of this case has to begin with the fact that the administrative law judge found Mr. Mulligan to be disabled for a closed period of time. We have to look at the basis for that decision for that period of time. In March of 2005, there's medical evidence that indicates his oxygen saturation was 97 to 98%. He had the chemotherapy-induced neuropathy, and he was taking the narcotic pain medication Percocet at that time. Through August of 2006, the oxygen saturation is still at 98%. Goes from 97 to 98 and stays at 98. And after exercise, it drops to the low 90s. Now, the administrative law judge says that this is an improvement because after exercise, it only drops to the low 90s. But what he doesn't explain in his decision is that the exercise was walking down the clinic hall with the doctor and then walking back up. So it's not any sort of a vigorous activity. But his saturation level drops to the low 90s.
So Mr. Whitley, what are we to make of this odd spot in the administrative law judge's opinion where we just have the asterisks in the brackets explain how severity of impairments decreased in terms of signs, symptoms, and or laboratory findings?
I hope you make of it the same thing that I do, which is the evidence isn't there. And there was some desire of the judge to go back and fill in the blanks to support his ultimate opinion, and honestly, there isn't anything in the evidence.
I mean, that's really the pivotal point, isn't it? Because there's an agreement that Mr. Mulligan was disabled for a period of time.
Absolutely, it's the pivotal point, and I guess what I was leading up to is that the condition that Mr. Mulligan was in at the time that he was determined to be disabled, and then the condition that he was in at the time that the administrative law judge says his disability ceased, was the same. And he indicates in his decision, as you pointed out, explain how he improved. But there is no explanation of how he improved. And in the medical evidence, there is no evidence of how he improved. The neuropathy is still there. The narcotic pain medication is still being taken. Notation of the fatigue induced as a side effect is still present and noted by his physicians.
What did he say? What did Mr. Mulligan say at the hearing regarding his depression?
He said that he is depressed, and the oncologist surgeon said that he's been treated for chronic depression by the family physician. But there is actually nothing in the record that indicates that the family physician was treating him for depression. But I don't think that finding was a reason why the administrative law judge found him disabled in the first place. And certainly can't be then a reason to take him off disability subsequently if the two reasons, the oxygen level and the neuropathy, have remained the same throughout from February 5th to August 11th and beyond.
But what about the fatigue? I mean, because it seemed to me one of the reasons from your point of view he is actually unemployable is that he just can't make it through a day, and employers don't normally give people, you know, a couple hours a day to take a nap. And the administrative law judge, however much people might enjoy that, but the administrative law judge finds the evidence of fatigue inconsistent with his reports of severe fatigue. I'm looking at page 10 of the ALJ's opinion.
I noted that too in the decision of the ALJ, but I don't know what basis there is in the record for him to conclude that.
Well, he's saying that that Dr. Lindquist's letters show that his well, maybe they're just kind of, the doctors are repeating what he's saying about fatigue. Reports from the physical medicine and rehabilitation specialist, the neurologist, contain no references to fatigue. Dr. Lindquist did report that he lies down frequently, but the ALJ says these reports merely reiterate the claimant's subjective complaints.
Well, I agree that the treating doctors didn't prescribe as a medical treatment taking a nap, but they do note that he's taking these large amounts of narcotic pain medications, which, as a recognized side effect, cause excessive daytime fatigue, which necessitates him to lie down during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless of whether it's a prescribed nap or a medication, a prescribed medication-induced nap, shouldn't make any difference in the overall determination of disability from the ALJ's perspective.
So the ALJ, though, seems to find, is bothered by the lack of reference to significant fatigue in the various medical reports. This is what he says, you know, so...
This is what he says, but the three, you know, relevant reports are January 26th of 06, where it's noted, and then in September 13th of 06, after the cutoff date, the treating physician says, my letter from January of 06 is still pertinent. He continues taking narcotic pain medication for his refractory painful chemotherapy-induced neuropathy. And nothing changed from January of 06 to September of 06. And the same way with the oxygen saturation level. They say that he's improving, but they've been saying he's improving all along, but the actual test results still are after exercise, which is a short walk up to 2 minutes, he's in the low 90s. He was that way in 05, and he's still that way in September of 06 after the cutoff date. So I guess I'm a little bit lost myself in understanding the judge's decision and or his rationale for saying that there was a spontaneous improvement on August 11th of 2006, because there's nothing in the record. He says, while I find the claimant credible about his complaints of pain, they fit with the diagnosis that he has up through that date, and then after that date, I don't find him credible. There's nothing in the record, whatever, to suggest that he has somehow changed his story or that the diagnosis has been altered in any way.
So he's what, is he 44 years old now or 43?
Yes, he is 45 now. So without even really looking at the residual functional capacity or what the doctor or the treating physician or the ME may say that he can do, the fundamental question is, was there a basis to terminate the disability that was previously found? Is there evidence to support that? And in this record, there just isn't.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Garin.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, James Garin for the Commissioner. I'd like to address some of the questions that you had just now. The point of comparison here is the time that Mr. Mulligan alleged that he became disabled. This was the point when he was undergoing major surgery, removing a part of his lung for lung cancer, followed by a very serious period where he was undergoing chemotherapy with problems with nausea and vomiting and so forth. It was during that period that the ALJ found that he was unable to perform even sedentary work.
But why did the ALJ conclude that his symptoms were no longer credible after August of 2006? What changed at that point?
I think what the ALJ is saying, Your Honor, is that he's alleging that his symptoms are staying the same. In effect, and that's obviously the issue in this case, whether there was improvement in his medical condition. To the extent that he's saying that there's no improvement, I think the record simply doesn't support it.
But I'm having trouble with that, too, because, first of all, we do have this glaring omission in the ALJ's explanation. But secondly, we have Dr. Lundquist's September 06 letter suggesting continuity of symptoms. we have this kind of bizarre statement by the ALJ that the claimant's statements concerning the intensity, persistence, and limiting effects of the symptoms are not entirely credible beginning on September 1, 2006. That's really a peculiar statement. But I don't see where there's actual concrete evidence of change.
Was his medication decreased?
I don't think there's evidence of that one way or another.
A big problem?
I think the point that the ALJ is making, there is the letter of Dr. Lundquist saying that there's fatigue.
Saying the information contained in the letter dated January 25, 2006 is still pertinent. Mr. Mulligan continues to have significant fatigue. He is unable to work for any long periods of time without having to lie down.
What bothered the ALJ here is that we have letters that are produced for the purposes of the litigation, in effect.
The doctors produce them when they asked. If they didn't produce them, then you'd say, well, there's no evidence.
Well, it would be reasonable, the ALJ reasoned, it would be reasonable to assume that if he was experiencing fatigue to the extent that it was disabling, that would appear in the treatment notes. There would be some sort of a reference to it. Presumably, they would be addressing this problem. Should they change his medication? Should they decrease the medication, as Judge Rovner suggested? But what bothered the ALJ about this is that there was no evidence at all in the treatment notes. You just have these two kind of conclusory statements by Dr. Lundquist.
Well, maybe that's just because the doctor is focusing on the pain and the peripheral neuropathy and the numbness, and everybody understands that the side effects of these medications is somnolence, fatigue, etc. Finding this huge significance in the absence of the mention of the word fatigue is troubling.
Well, it should also be noted that Dr. Carlson, as early as July 2005, was saying, after examining Mr. Mulligan and certainly being aware of his condition, was saying that he could perform sedentary to light work. That was consistent with the ALJ's decision. Also, Dr. Kavanaugh's letter.
Is Dr. Carlson specifically addressing the duration? Because maybe he can for an hour or two, but can he sit there 8 hours a day? I don't remember Dr. Carlson addressing that point.
I don't think Dr. Carlson specifically said how long. He did suggest that he could perform sedentary to light work. Dr. Kavanaugh said that he could perform work, and again, this is in August 2006, which is the date that the ALJ found significant because it was the first date of evidence from the surgeon.
Well,
he said that he could perform work if his pulmonary condition was accommodated.
It really is very troubling that there's an absence of any actual analysis under Header 12, and it seems that there are selective references to passages from the medical people who seem to believe only that he's improved since his worst days and someday may be able to work, you know, albeit in some limited fashion. I mean, don't you think this has to go back?
Well, I think that the passage you're referring to, Judge Rovner, with under finding number 12, is a little misleading because it suggests that there's an absence of any analysis of an improvement in his condition. If you look elsewhere in the decision, however, the ALJ actually discusses fairly extensively the evidence of improvement. On pages 131 and 32 of the appendix, in the ALJ's decision, he discusses Dr. Kavanaugh's August 2006 letter, in which Dr. Kavanaugh said there were clinical findings showing good pulmonary function, chest x-rays to continue to show improvement. overall pulmonary status continued to improve. This is clearly evidence of improvement. Dr. Lundquist also...
But it's not evidence. I think what Judge Rovner was saying is that he's improved enough to get over the line for employability in any position in the market.
Well, and it's important to remember also, Judge, that the ALJ didn't find that he had completely recovered.
No, I understand that. The only question, you know, if we're step five, you know, we need to know, is there anything he can do? But just because he's improved from the worst days of surgery and chemotherapy doesn't mean he's made it to that line.
Exactly, Your Honor. The question is whether he's improved in such a way that he can perform work.
Right.
Within the limitations that the ALJ found.
That burden is on the commissioner. Nobody, I mean, everybody agrees he can't go back to his old work, so we're not in a step four case.
Well, respectfully, I would argue that the burden is still on the claimant to demonstrate what his residual functional capacity is. The burden is on the commissioner then to demonstrate that there are jobs available in the economy that he can perform with that residual functional capacity. Now, it's also important to remember that it's not just the ALJ looking at Dr. Kavanaugh. The ALJ also based his opinion on the opinion of Dr. Hiduchenko, the physician who testified at the hearing, who basically said that he had... Dr. Hiduchenko actually said that he was limited to sedentary to light work with no heights or temperature extremes and no foot controls, taking into account the issue of the peripheral neuropathy. The ALJ added to that no dust, fumes, gases, smoke production quotas. The ALJ was aware of pulmonary problems. And
the ALJ doesn't add in the need to take naps.
No, the ALJ did not accept the need to take naps because the ALJ found that the evidence didn't support that, that the evidence of fatigue, the only mention of fatigue appears in the two letters of Dr. Lundquist and not in his treatment notes, and the ALJ found that that was insufficient. Based on that evidence, the ALJ concluded that he could perform a limited range of sedentary to light work.
I need to ask you one technical question. There's no transcript of the second hearing in the record. Is there a video of it? I understand this was a video hearing.
I'm not aware of that, Your Honor. I don't know if there's a... I would assume that there was a video that was kept of it.
But it didn't make it into the record somehow?
Apparently not.
Do we even know if a transcript was ever created for that hearing?
We do not, Your Honor. That's not established in this record.
Oh.
If there are no further questions, we ask the court to defer to the ALJ's judgment in this case and to affirm the commissioner's decision.
Thanks, Mr. Guerin. Mr. Whitley, do you have anything more?
Have anything more to offer by way of?
No, we're all ready to go.
All right.
To the country. Yeah. All right. So thanks to one and all, and this case will be taken under advisement, and the court will remain in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:30, or maybe July 9th. I'm not certain which.
Until a later date.
A later date. Thank you, everyone.